The Delaney Project is a multidisciplinary project created to celebrate the life and works of visual artist and Knoxville native Buford Delaney, and to expand public awareness about this man who largely, I would say, has been forgotten until now. You can learn more about the Knoxville-based project at thedelaneyproject.org. And here in the studio with me right now are two people who are an integral part of this project: Catherine Frady, Artistic Director of Marble City Opera and Baritone and General Manager of Marble City Opera, Brandon Gibson. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thanks
for having us.
I'm really looking forward to talking with you about your upcoming production of Shadowlight, which will be the world premiere and is a part of the Delaney Project. This opera tells the story of Buford Delaney with music by Larry Dellinger and libretto by Emily Anderson. I imagine that this has been a long time in the making. Tell me how this entire thing came about. Catherine, were you approached by the Delaney Project to commission a new opera about Buford Delaney?
I was, and at that time it wasn't even called the Delaney Project. I think Monique Wells, she's from Paris, and she's a lover of Buford Delaney's work, and she had brought it to the attention of the museum. David Butler and Sylvia Peters had gone to Paris to see some of the work, and the museum was collecting some of the artwork of his and wanted to do this exhibition, and Sylvia had mentioned to Emily Anderson, their friends, and she knew Emily writes operas, and she said it would be wonderful if we could have an opera about Buford Delaney. And so Emily was like, okay, I'll write the libretto. You want Catherine to produce it. So she sent me an email and told me about the project. And at that time, it was under a completely different name. It was in 2017. So I said, yeah, let's have a phone conversation. We had a conversation. She told me about Buford Delaney. She told me about the museum and the art that they were collecting. And I said, absolutely, you know, let's do this.
That's so exciting. Okay, so you mentioned his artwork in Paris. Maybe we should talk a little bit about Buford for those folks who aren't familiar with who he is. Brandon, you are singing the role of Buford. Who was this man?
An extremely talented artist. He was born and raised here in Knoxville, the son of, I believe, a school teacher and a pastor. A local sign maker noticed his talent and said, I will teach you what I know. And so trained him in his early painting and artwork until I believe he was 18 or 19, at which point he said, you know, hey, I've taught you everything I know. You should go up north and study there. So he gave him some letters of introduction and sent him first to Boston. And so he went there, and at the time, art schools, as was everything, was extremely segregated. So he couldn't formally attend the art school there. But with the letters of introduction he'd been given, he was able to basically sweep floors at night and audit some of the classes by day. And so he learned some of his further formal training there. And then once he kind of tapped that out, he then went to New York and became a seminal figure in the Harlem Renaissance. He was much beloved in the social scene there, but also in the art scene. And he began to kind of flesh out his own style based off of kind of the formal training that he'd learned in Knoxville and in Boston. He kind of came into his own in New York as a part of the social scene and the art scene there, and then expatriated to Paris, where he spent the last 20 or 30 years of his life, and actually spent those years largely inside of an insane asylum because he was, we believe now, was undiagnosed as schizophrenic. And so he, for all of his life, said that he painted to keep the voices in his head from overwhelming him. And so this was something that he kind of kept secret for his entire life and fought all his life. But at the end, you know, it did kind of overwhelm him. And so that's the Paris connection. He spent a great deal of his life there, just in the asylum. But he painted until the very end. That's why there's so many of his works around to collect, is that he was a prolific artist, but that's why it was kind of the only way that he was able to find peace.
And so this was sort of in the early 1900s is when he lived?
Yes. He was born in 1901, and I think he died in 79, I believe.
Yeah.
And I've read a little bit about him, and I know that there are, you know, rumors that maybe he was homosexual and struggled to find his place here in the South, which could be a difficult...
I don't think they were rumors, you know. I think that that was probably true. And but I think it's more than just being a homosexual, but also being black in the South during that time and in Knoxville.
He's a very religious man as well. And so, especially coming from that religious upbringing from his father, he was deeply conflicted about the whole thing, mm-hmm. but recognized it as a part of him that he could not hide. But most of his life, he kept it very private. Mm-hmm. Even when acting upon that, he still never, that I can see in any of the readings I've done, I've never formally took someone as a, you know, as a lover or a partner, but just kind of had encounters.
I mean, I think in that time period, you wouldn't. It wouldn't be allowed. You know, I mean, right. you could have gotten in a lot of trouble. And I think that today we don't realize how close this is to our history. Yeah. You know, that even just to be gay, like, was not something that you could do publicly. So, mm-hmm. I mean, of course you would hide it.
Mm-hmm. On top of, like you said, being a black man in the South.
Right.
Or just in America at that time.
Absolutely.
Even.
So, I mean, do you think that he was, for lack of a better word, escaping by moving to Boston and New York, where maybe he was more accepted?
Definitely, I would say so. Mm-hmm. And kind of following in the lead of, he was close personal friends and had a deep mentor-mentee relationship with James Baldwin. Mm-hmm. James Baldwin actually went to Paris first. And in his writings, you can see how he contrasted the experience of the African-American overseas as opposed to it in his own country. Mm-hmm. And so I think Baldwin definitely said to him, hey man, it's a lot better for us over here. Mm-hmm. Come, basically. Yeah. And a lot of people with the means to do so, a lot of artists in particular, were taking that trip. I know Paul Robeson also, among many others, kind of noted that they were treated just so much better. The standard of living was so much different mm-hmm. abroad than it was in their home country. Yeah, something that Baldwin definitely lamented in some of his later work as well.
Had you heard of Buford Delaney before this project came about?
Not at all. Yeah. And it's a shame because when I moved to Knoxville, my family moved here when I was in the 10th grade. I lived on Dandridge Avenue, not far from what was apparently the Delaney family home, right next to the Beck Center. I went to Austin East High School, which also is apparently where his entire family went. Before it was integrated, became Austin East when it was just
Austin.
Mm-hmm. So I went to the high school. I lived on the street and didn't hear anything about the man until I was...
Last week. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Why do these stories get lost? Why aren't they told?
I think that there are people doing great work with the history that we have here. You know, Jack Neely in particular with the Knoxville History Project. But there's a lot of history that we have here that goes overlooked. I think we are a small but growing town, and I think sometimes we focus more on the growth and not on perhaps where we came from. Another thing that I learned in doing, you know, research for and just kind of working towards this project, I was a part of the Knoxville Red Summer documentary, and I learned as a part of that the Old City was actually a black business district 100 years ago. And I said, oh, wait, I'm downtown all the time. I work downtown. I'm downtown every day. I didn't know that was a black business district. Now it's just where the bars are, you know, but stuff like that, I think, is underground and is all around us.
Mm-hmm.
The stories
aren't
told.
Yeah, trying to move into the future and, mm-hmm. you know, make the city what it wants to be and continuing to grow. You lose sight of the past, yeah.
Well, there are more characters in the opera other than Buford. Can you tell us a little bit about the opera? Who else is in Shadowlight?
Shadowlight consists of five characters, Buford Delaney, James Baldwin, and three voices. And the voices actually play lots of different characters that Buford knew one time or another. The opera kind of takes place in Paris in the insane asylum. Well, it takes place during a lot of his life, but we're playing it as though he's in the insane asylum. And you hear Baldwin at the funeral talking. So it's like after his death, it's during his life when he's in the asylum. It's in New York in Greenwich Village. It's in Paris. I mean, it's all over the place. It's a little schizophrenic as Buford Delaney was. So mm-hmm. it's kind of a great way to get an insight into how he was really feeling. And the chorus, the three voices, as I mentioned, they play several different people that he knew. Mary Painter, they play his mom's voice, you hear. Larry Calgagno, which is another artist he knew, as well as Brancusi. So there were lots of people that he was at parties with and he was in his scene with him that you also kind of, you hear their names. So you might want to look all of these people up afterwards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What does the title Shadowlight mean?
Shadowlight was something Larry, Emily, and myself came up with the title because it didn't have a title originally when we sent it to Larry Dellinger to compose. Shadow and light really represent Buford Delaney really well, because out of the darkness that he experienced with these voices telling him all these negative things, he was able to create such beautiful work. And he was really inspired by light. And a lot of his paintings have that. So that's kind of where that title came from.
Critics of his work would say that he was almost obsessed with the relationship that light had, not only on his subjects when he was painting people, but also on the way that light was reflected in and even refracted by, you know, water and his surroundings. As he got more and more abstract, he always held on to the relationship of light and darkness in his work. And it was honestly something that was taught to him by his original art teacher here in Knoxville. He was a sign painter and kind of taught him about light and shadow as kind of the most important thing. And so you can see it, kind of trace it along from his early works. He started doing maybe some landscapes. And the KMA exhibit has a few of the early pieces, and it travels all along even to his more abstract paintings. And whether he's painting people or just a feeling or an emotion, there's always a sense of light and bright color and fire even, but contrasted with, you know, a darker side, whether it be his emotions or just a cooler temperature-wise type feel or aspect of the work.
The opera, actually, I mean, it focuses a lot on Buford's mental state and the voices that he heard and how they affected him and how he used the painting to keep them at bay. But he also tried to commit suicide when he was in Paris in the asylum. And so it talks about that as well. And it's really dramatic. You'll see the character of Buford that everyone loved and that, you know, he was dancing and singing at parties and he loved music and he loved art. And you really see the trouble that he went through as well.
This opera is accompanied by an orchestra. What is the orchestration?
We have 9 players in the orchestra. It's a really cool orchestration because you have the strings, but we have saxophone, which is unusual for an opera to have saxophone, but it really is great to add that jazz element, and a couple of other woodwinds and percussion, as well as harmonicas being played by the singers on stage. So,
wow.
Yeah. Very interesting.
That'll be fun.
Yeah.
Shadowlight is being performed at the Beck Cultural Center, which I've actually never been to. What is the performance space going to be like there?
Well, we chose the performance space, one, because it's the Beck Cultural Center, and we thought it would be great to put a story about Buford Delaney literally next door to a house that he grew up in, but also because Marble City Opera likes site-specific productions, and we really wanted a white black box. We wanted basically a square room that had white walls so that we could use projections. I walked in and it was perfect. Here's my white cube I was looking for, and it's in the perfect location. And so we're going to be using projections throughout the production. The cast is wearing a lot of white so that we can cover them in the projections as well. And it's going to be a very artistic production.
This is a new opera about an artist who was an important figure during the Harlem Renaissance. Do you envision this opera being performed elsewhere?
We would love it to be performed elsewhere. I mean, I'd love to take it to every city that Buford was in, you know, Boston, New York, and Paris. I think that would be the great trajectory for the operas to go through those cities.
Definitely. Well, fingers crossed that happens. Shadowlight is just one event as part of the Delaney Project. Can you talk just a little bit about some of the other events that are taking place?
I believe we mentioned the exhibit at the KMA. The curator, Stephen Wicks and co, really did a great job in drawing together a lot of the famous works that if you were to go to Google Images and, you know, type in this artist's name, many of the most famous and most prominent paintings that you see there are the very ones that they were able to draw together for the exhibit. And so can't say enough about that. There's a documentary that I was fortunate to work on with East Tennessee PBS, I think simply titled Buford Delaney, that is airing a few times throughout the month. Then there's also the KSO is doing a piece. Catherine, do you know anything more about that?
They're doing a tribute to Delaney with a few American pieces as well as Knoxville-related pieces that is going to be traveling to Washington, D.C., which is exciting. The library has been doing a series on Buford Delaney. I think Jack Neely did a speech on him earlier this month. And the UT has a symposium coming starting on February 19th.
Another exhibit just opened today, actually, that I remember at the East Tennessee Historical Center on Gay Street. A complimentary exhibit to the one that's at the KMA, featuring pieces by not only Buford Delaney, but also his brother, Joseph Delaney, who was also a famous artist that people don't talk about also, but actually, I believe, had an artist in residency here at UT mm-hmm. back in the 70s, and another artist named Ruth Cobb Bryce. And so that exhibit opens today. Then we'll go until, I believe, June the 10th, and features kind of a timeline of events that took place in Knoxville around their formative years, and explore some of their art and the relationship that the South and kind of the context of the South had on their development as artists.
And also, if you're at the performance at the Beck Center, then the Beck Center has a little tribute to Buford Delaney in the house as well, so you could walk through and see that as well. There are a lot of ways that you can find out about Buford Delaney and his family even before coming to the show, and I would highly recommend doing that. I highly recommend going to the museum, seeing his work live and in person, and really just trying to capture who he was and how talented he was. I mean, it's so amazing. I mean, there's so many talented people in Knoxville today, but it's amazing that Buford was here and no one knows of him, mm-hmm. you know, and that this is our first time really experiencing him in this city, and that all of these people are coming together to tell everyone we possibly can, look at this famous person from Knoxville. I mean, he's literally famous, yeah. except in his own town.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, in closing, I feel like I should mention that opening night is already sold out. So if you want to see Shadowlight, you'll probably want to get your tickets soon. Catherine Frady, Executive and Artistic Director of Marble City Opera, and baritone Brandon Gibson, and General Manager of Marble City Opera, thank you so much for coming in to talk with me about the exciting world premiere of Shadowlight.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Marble City Opera performs Shadowlight, an opera about artist Buford Delaney, with music by Larry Dellinger and libretto by Emily Anderson, February 28th and 29th at 7:30 p.m. at the Beck Cultural Center, located at 1927 Dandridge Avenue in Knoxville. Tickets and information at marblecityopera.com.